Welcome to HorrorFatale.com, almost live, where sarcasm goes to the movies and snark watches TV, with your hosts, the Horror Fatale and the Diva Mummy.
Welcome to HorrorFatale.com, almost live. I'm your host, the Horror Fatale, bringing you this week's horror news, reviews, recaps, and information. If you would be so kind, please like, subscribe, and give us a rating at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or whatever platform you are listening.
Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes made of ticky-tacky little boxes on the hillside. And they all look just the same.
You want to control your life, but life isn't a science experiment. You can't contain your world forever. Try doing one thing that scares you over break, okay?
Yeah. This serves as an entry voucher
for Minos escape rooms.
Be the first to escape our most immersive room yet.
And win $1 million.
So, when does the game start?
I think this is the escape room.
We should look for clues.
What are we looking for here?
Anything that looks like a puzzle or a code. It looks like an oven dial.
That looks real.
It's kind of warming up in here.
Excuse me, we'd like our hit now, please.
Well, that's creepy as hell.
Is it getting hotter?
How do we get out of here?
It's Fahrenheit 451. Got it.
About immersive.
What's wrong with you? That was real.
Whoa.
Dumb question. Are we outside?
So we get this figured out, so we get the hell out of here.
Who would do this?
They know every move that we're making.
They knew everything about us.
This is my hospital bed.
Me too.
They made these rooms for us.
Have you ever seen things that weren't there before?
I am not imagining this.
Surviving is a choice.
Yep. Come on out.
Yep.
Let me out of here.
That's why they chose us.
And they all look just the same.
What you just heard was the trailer for Escape Room. I think it came out earlier this year. And I guess it did pretty well because it's getting a sequel, as you might have heard. And they have unveiled the cast. Sony has released the names of the newest cast members, Deadline reports. And joining the cast are Holland Roden. She is of Teen Wolf fame and Channel Zero, Butcher's Block, and India Moore. And India, I'm very happy that she's casting this because she is in one of my favorite shows, Pose, that is currently running on FX. They just finished their second season, and it's such a good show. If you don't watch it, I would suggest you check it out. And she's a trans woman, and she's gorgeous. And watching her come into her due, I should say, it's been really good. Her character is called Angel on the show, and she's really good in the character. So it's gonna be neat to see what she does with this role. Her and Holland are joined by Thomas Cockerell, and he can be seen in Table 19, which I think I watched, but he's also in The 100, which I used to watch and I dropped because, as I've told you before, I'm not loyal. If a show starts to bore me, I start to get bored, and I think that show has went on way too long. It was such a good concept, and it jumped the hound or whatever, the shark. It jumped the shark. That's the narrative. And they're going to be joined by Carlito Olivero. And he was in Step of High Water, which I haven't seen. So I think it's safe to say he's a newcomer. Let's see. And they're going to star opposite the returnees Taylor Russell and Logan Miller from the first movie. And let's see. Adam Robitaille is on board to direct the follow-up. And let's see. Who's writing this? Somebody called Bradgie F. Scott, and I gotta admit I was really lazy and didn't look it up, but he has apparently written, or she has apparently written the script for Escape Room 2, and it doesn't have a title to go along with it. I guess still escaping from the escape room, maybe, but it's still being produced by the same Neil Moritz. So we'll see. I don't know if you remember, but the first installment had the girl from True Blood, Deborah Wall, and Jay Ellis, and Tyler the Bane, and Nick Donnelly. And, you know, they found themselves in a maze of deadly rooms, had to use their wits to get out of it or die. And I forgot, oh, the reason why, spoiler alert, the guy was fascinated with them because they had all survived previous situations where they should have died. So, I guess. But there are no details yet from Sony about what Escape Room will be about. It's just slated to hit the theaters on August 2020. So watch this space. The next really big thing in horror news, and this is a really, really welcomed news item in my opinion, Sam Raimi, you guys, has teamed up with Columbia to direct a horror thriller. He's reteaming with, you know, Columbia, who did Spider-Man, and it's an untitled horror project right now. But I was trying to figure out the last horror movie that he did, and I can't find it. But you guys, it's a big deal because I really, really love all his movies. Even the ones that I'm not supposed to love or whatever, but I still love them. And if you don't know who he is, you should. He is the Spider-Man guy. He helmed the original one with Tobey Maguire. The original. They're not original, but the set with Tobey Maguire. And I think, yeah, I'm right. The last horror movie he did was back in 2009 when he did Drag Me to Hell. A lot of people didn't love Drag Me to Hell. I happen to have loved Drag Me to Hell. I have a novice friend who, she only started watching these horror movies because of me and Diva Mummy. And so she didn't get it. She didn't see the genius and the funny and the fun that was Drag Me to Hell. But, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you're a horror head, so you know. But he did, his production company did just do Crawl. I don't know if you guys watched that movie, but it's a pretty good popcorn-y movie for what it is. And it's currently on DVD, so you should look it up. It's a man versus nature thing. And in this case, it's a woman versus nature. She takes on these angry crocodiles during a hurricane and a flood. And you have to watch it. I'm not going to spoil you to find out whether she wins. But that is this week's horror news. Escape 2 has found their lead. And Sam Raimi is coming back to direct some more horror, guys.
Is anyone here?
Good evening.
I'm sorry, I know it's really last minute with tomorrow being Christmas Eve and all, but I was hoping to find a present for my sister.
All of the objects in this shop have a story behind them. All the objects in here have a story that's never been told.
What time is the Christmas party tonight?
What's a six?
You're not gonna drink tonight, are you?
We hope you like it.
Where are we going?
Hey, Shelley. What is it?
Hello, Anna.
Stop!
Are you gonna help me?
They're gonna keep walking all over you. You're nothing but a two-pump chump.
Stories are the most powerful things we possess. They transcend death.
That was the trailer for the upcoming film Holiday Hell, starring Jeffrey Combs. And this is this week's review. First off, it's a non-studio movie, so you know what that means. It didn't have a gigantic budget. But it's a rare gem, because sometimes those are hit or miss. Sometimes they can be really, really bad. Even if they have a whole ton of money, they can be really, really bad. But sometimes when there are smaller budgets, that means they have to kind of skimp on things, effects and makeup and that kind of thing, and lighting and all that kind of stuff. So it can tend not to look that great. But kind of, to be honest, in this respect, didn't even matter. This is what I'm deeming a hidden holiday gem, because I couldn't think of a less corny way to say it. I just watched, as you know, if you listen to the previous podcast or watching the site, you can read the review for In Search of Darkness, which is a documentary about 80s horror. And this film would fit nicely into that realm because of the way it's done. It has a complete, I don't know why I'm going on and on about Chopping Mall. I'm going to have to put Chopping Mall in. But it has that Chopping Mall, Sleepaway Camp kind of vibe to it. So it's a really pretty good movie. And I'm going to put the full written review up in a minute. But let me just tell you a little bit about it now. On Christmas Eve, a woman enters a curiosity shop looking for a last-minute gift. There she meets a mysterious shopkeeper who tells her the horrific stories behind four objects in the shop. As he weaves tales of killer dolls, witches, and psycho Santas, the woman senses she might be in danger. She has until midnight to choose her gift, but will she choose wisely? The movie stars horror icon Jeffrey Combs, Joel Murray from Hatchet, AKA known as Bill Murray's little brother. But he has a pretty good career. He was also in Mad Men and Two and a Half Men, a couple episodes of Two and a Half Men. And he's a pretty good actor. And I'm sure he's sick of being told that he's Bill Murray's brother, because he has his own career and he's good. Jeff Brian Davis from Killer Pad, Lisa Coronado from Twin Peaks, and Megan Camerini Nacer from Dead West. And Jeffrey Combs is always really good. You know, you just cannot not watch this dude when he's in things, because he does his performances always, no matter what. Like, if it's a studio movie, a studio show, non-studio movie, non-studio show, he's always, you know, gives a really good performance. Here he plays sort of, he's the shopkeeper in this, and he has that whole Crypt Keeper vibe, or Clarence Thomas III. What's his name? Clarence? I can't think of his name. Clarence Williams III from Tales from the Hood, the Mortician, where he's walking her through each tale on each item. As I said, and all of the items are sinister in nature. I'm not going to spoil you, because I want you to watch the film. But the strongest item or segment in the movie stars actual Joel Murray, which I mentioned earlier. He had the strongest story. It was a really good, well-performed, well-written, well-shot, well-filmed segment. And it was the strongest one of all three of them. I mean, all four of the scenes. It's a classic story of revenge, but the first two, you know, the first one is teen horror, if you will, that slasher vibe. Also had a little of a revenge tip to it as well. You know, they followed the tropes. Don't have sex to get dead, that kind of thing. But they tried to have a little nice twist at the end. So it wasn't bad. The second one involves a running around killer doll. That's always tricky or hit or miss, and it can come out corny. I think in this one, the child is the one that's doing the leading of the doll on. So that made it extra spooky, if you will, and kind of creepy. Because when a child does evil in films, children are usually the creepiest of them all. And that's certainly no exception to it. Let's see. The ending was really good, in my opinion, and unexpected and nicely performed by everyone involved. And it had a good twist to it in the end. And I think you'll enjoy it. So, one more time, the movie actually premieres November 1st. And the actual review will be posted to the site very soon. It's interesting that when the movie doesn't suck, I don't go on and on about it like I did last week. Because the film that we watched last week was horrible, and this one was really good. So I had less to say. Huh, funny how that works. Less to say when there's less to criticize, I suppose. Now, full warning though, next week it'll be a doubleheader. This portion of the show will be, I'm thinking, kind of long, because very cool, we are going to watch two things this upcoming week. I know it's gonna be hard, but we can do it. It's Halloween week, has to be a good show. We're gonna watch Portal, which stars the horror queen Heather Langenkamp and Ryan Merriman. And I know you guys remember Ryan Merriman. He was in Rings, he was in Halloween Resurrection, and there's some more stuff that he's been in. You'll recognize him automatically, but I don't even need to explain who Heather Langenkamp is. If you don't know, get off my podcast. No, get off my podcast. Please listen. But that'll be next week, as well as Dr. Sleep. Yes, my friends. Living in LA has its benefits. And I'm going to go to a screening on Sunday night of Dr. Sleep. So, yes. You can expect us to have much to say about that film. And it shall also be followed by a written review to be posted to the site. So, one more time. Watch this space. You know what that means? It's time for some TV watching. Per the usual, we watched our same favorite shows, and episode 5 of Creepshow, the review is currently up on horrorfatale.com, where I'm way more articulate in written form. Interesting. Anyway, this was... I know I probably have said this a couple of times by now, but this time it's It's for real. I'm for real. This was, to me, the best episode from the series thus far. It's not even just based on the elements that they used, because just based on the fact that it was so clever, you guys. And because I'm not doing spoilers, because I want you to actually watch the show. Again, if you don't have Shudder, I suggest you get a trial. I gotta work with them and ask them a question about perhaps getting a code or something for you guys, for my listeners. But, you know, if you don't have it, get the trial. I think you won't regret it. Seriously, you will not regret it. It, in my opinion, tonight's episode had such a cool theme. It was, in my opinion, unintended consequences. And there were some very subtle political undertones that they used. And it was one director this time. The one guy, he directed both segments, and his name is John Harrison. Sorry, Mr. Harrison, I was very lazy and did look you up. But you did a wonderful job with this, as I'm sure you have done with your previous works. The tonight's segments were Night of the Paw, and I want to say This Is Country as Possible, and Times Is Tough, and Musker Holler. And that Southern accent was amazing, because, you guys, remember, I'm Southern. Anyway, this was also the episode that David Arquette graced us with his presence. We haven't seen him in a while. At least I haven't. He's probably been around, but I haven't, to be honest, paid any attention to Mr. Arquette. But he comes in the second segment, in the Musky Holler segment. And he does a really good job of not being a good guy. Let's break it down, the episode down as much as I can without spoiling you. The first one is Night of the Paw, and it had Bruce Davison. And he's been on a lot of things. When you see his face, you'll automatically know who he is. I'm not going to do resume doing right now because I don't feel like it. And he's joined by Hannah Barefoot, whom I've kind of recognized a little bit from here and there. I'm not going to call her a newcomer. I'm not going to do her resume either, but she's been in a couple of things here and there. Both of them are really good. And it involves a monkey paw. And as you might know, that's like one of those old school horror narratives. It's almost like in the vein of a djinn. You wish on a monkey paw and it never comes out right. So I don't even know why people do that, or even in horror movies. I think kind of in this respect, those horror movies and those things don't exist. You know what I mean? It's kind of meta for meta. And so that's definitely what's going on here. The monkey paw gets the best of them repeatedly, and they never learn. It was good because you get to see a zombie. Zombies are always cool. And the second segment was the one that was very short. You're going to be shocked by how short the segment is. They get in, they move really fast, they tell the story really quickly. And I want you guys to pay close attention to a lot of things that's happening in it, because there are a lot of things happening in that segment, as short as it is, and they're all important, and they all serve a lot of purpose. And like I said, overall, you know, the episode, you're going to get your gore, you're going to get your murder, you're going to get some zombies, and you got some really good callbacks to things. Again, that had them having the one director of both segments tied it in nicely, because clearly he had a vision and a theme he wanted to do. And the common theme to me was clearly consequences. You know, in the case of the Night of the Paw, you know, wishing on a monkey's paw always brings the wish. But at what consequence? You know, it always doesn't go right. And literally in the case of Times and Tough and Musker Holler, there is literally a trial held in consequence of investigation. And I know that that's a little nerdy, But I saw it and went, oh my God, how clever. So I can't pick one segment which was favorite of the episode because of the fact that that clever use of theme. Can't pick. So I just want to say bravo, y'all. That was really, really, really well done. I cannot stress again how good this series is. I'm really enjoying it. I was really worried about it at first because, you know, they did a Creepshow 3 and it did not go well. It was terrible. So what Greg Nicotero, dang it, I'm so sorry, sir. Greg Nicotero, it's Italian, I think, has done, and Shudder, they've managed to capture all of the camp, all of the creep, all of the suspense. Just, they've made a really tight show, and just keep it up, guys. I don't know how long it's supposed to go. I want to say it's 12 episodes. I could be wrong. I should have looked that up beforehand. But episode 5, the review, and you can get a sneak of the trailer at Horror Fatale and read a little bit more. Perhaps that'll twist your arm to go and watch it. I hope I've done that enough. Let's check in with American Horror Story 1984. We had episode 6, and it was the 100th episode of the entire series. And it's crazy that it's 100 episodes because I remember getting my initial starter kit that came in the mail. You know, they mailed it, back then, this is how long ago it was. It actually came in a kit, a box with the materials, and it was actual DVD with the production booklet and all of that stuff. And it was really cool. I still have it somewhere. I should find it in Instagram. I should have did that earlier. And it's been that long. Wow. That's a long time ago, because now you just get screeners that you can see. I don't get screeners anymore, but that's, I don't know what's up with that. But anyway, I'm still watching the show. I guess because they're like, bitch, you ain't doing the reviews anymore. I haven't had time. I stopped doing the reviews, I guess, about 3 years ago because I went to grad school. And so I was trying to go to grad school and still do the site and work a full-time job at the same time. And it was just not, it was not happening. And so I dropped off, and I guess they dropped me. So my take on these shows, this show especially, I'm not getting a screener. I'm not in their family anymore. Anyway, but the season is going by really quickly, and it's really good season. It was also one of those ones where it could be hit or miss. However, this particular episode, for it to be the 100th episode of the series, I was expecting way, way more than I actually got. You guys, it was kind of slow, and it was a little bit uneventful. I'm aware of what they were doing. They're setting us up for the big battle. I get that, but did you have to force? They kind of did. They kind of bored us just a little bit. Let's see. Let's see what happened. Let's run through what happened really quickly. We got a flash forward instead of a flash backwards. A flashback backwards. A flashback as we previously get. We actually got a flash forward a couple of years to what's happened after the 84 murders at the camp. And Mr. Jingles and Richard Ramirez are still driving around California, remember, because if you're to be believed, this is actual the story of Richard Ramirez. He is actually still running around LA. They hadn't as of yet caught him, and so they stick to that. And you have he's teamed up with Mr. Jingles, and they're living this weird kind of messed up odd couple thing. Like, Richard's messy and wants to play rock music late at night, and Mr. Jingles wants to go to bed and take showers and eat cookies and watch TV. It's bizarre. It's a bizarre crazy little thing they had going. But needless to say, Mr. Jingle double crosses Richard, and he winds up getting arrested finally. So supposedly, I guess that's how we caught Richard Ramirez. Brooke's in jail because remember at the end of the episode she goes down for killing everybody, which we know she didn't do, but she's lost her last appeal. And I don't know, it's supposed to be 1989. That's a whole lot to happen in 5 years, but she's lost her appeal and has been sentenced to die on death row. That's not how that works, because we know you stay on death row a really, really long time. But hers was 5 years, and she's to be electrocuted in California. Not electrocuted, sorry, lethal injection, which I believe they still had then. I don't think we have a death penalty at all now in California. I've forgotten. I think you just stay in jail for life. I used to know that, but I'm pretty sure they don't execute here anymore. Anyway, Margaret has had the biggest glow up of them all. She's become like this murder site mogul. Like, she buys places where there have been murders and hosts events there, like buying the Lizzie Borden house and turning it into a bed and breakfast, that kind of shenanigans. What I really thought they were going to do with her is that she was going to have something to do with Murder House from the first season. And she still might, but they haven't said it yet. But anyway, so turns out she's a millionaire now, and she's married to Trevor. That's right, you guys. Trevor survived, and they have like this really messed up marriage from hell. He's doing like yayo. I hadn't heard anybody say yayo in years, but that's what he referred to his coke habit. And he basically is just married to her for dough, because he can't stand her, but they have this weird hate sex thing going. So there you go. Let's see what else happens. So Richard's really pissed that Mr. Jangles is out living his best life. Mr. Jangles gets married, has a wife, literally is, you know, looks, as I'm quoting somebody on Twitter, looks like he could do your taxes. And Richard doesn't like that. So he uses his power of Satan to possess a guard. And the guard goes to Mr. Jingle's house and murders his wife. And they have a young son. And, you know, it's just, that was so unnecessary. But that's what they did. They gave him this life and they snatched it all away. Richard is the reason why we can't have nice things. He kind of gets on my nerves, actually. The character kind of gets on my last nerves. But anyway, they set up the entire episode so there could be this big horror showdown back at the camp. Because, spoiler alert, guys, Brooke doesn't actually get executed during her execution. It gets foiled, and she winds up on her way back to the camp as well. Although, if I had have been her, I would have took my ass to Mexico somewhere and drank margaritas on the beach. Fuck a camp. But we wouldn't have a show if they did logical things. I get why like I said, the episode was the filler episode to set us up for the battle that's going to ensue. I won't even mention the other people, Montana and Xavier and Ray. They're stuck in, I guess, hell, and Montana's killing folk and all this kind of bullshit. It was kind of an eventful episode as far as this season has gone, because like I said, they had really good episodes. It's kind of different because I really expected more, because it was the 100th. I thought it was going to be like Rock and Sock'em nonstop, but they did not do that. Let's see. What else did we... Oh, we watched Nancy Drew episode 2. That was not on purpose. But I'm thinking I really like this show a little bit. The second episode kept with that narrative that I was talking about before, the supernatural. And we actually got the backstory of the ghost, Lucy Sable. And apparently everybody in town knows about her. And she kept popping up everywhere in the episode. And Nancy finally realized what she was seeing. So she actually found the woman's dress in her attic, and why did her parents have it? So it's going to be interesting as Nessie finds out the mystery that I think she's investigating another mystery, but I'm thinking that the mystery is going to be, why did her parents have this dead girl's dress in their attic, if you ask me. But it's a pretty good little show. It's not the best yet, but I can see it for it. It has, like I said, that Riverdale vibe to it. Let's see. I think that's all I want to share with you guys. I think I've talked to you long enough. And hopefully, if you've listened, you got some good information. And again, I would welcome you to visit horrorfatale.com, where you can read some words and see some trailers, comment. And I would ask you to follow me on Twitter at horrorfatale, HORRORFATALE. Yeah, I did just spell that shit for you. And on Instagram at thehorrorfatale. And until next time, be scared and lovely nightmares.
Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes made of ticky-tacky. Little boxes on the hillside. And they all look just